You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host. Welcome to 32 Thoughts, the interview, brought to you by the 2024 GMC Sierra Elevation. What you're about to hear, or rather who you're about to hear, is one of the best talkers and most thoughtful players in the NHL. James Van Riemsdyk, Bruins forward James Van Riemsdyk. Quite the career it's been for him so far. Second overall pick. We go in the Wayback Machine. Philadelphia Flyers, 2007, only behind Patrick Kane. Stints with the Toronto Maple Leafs, then back to Philadelphia. Now with the Boston Bruins, where he hopes to lead them to a Stanley Cup. In this interview we did with James Van Riemsdyk a couple of weeks ago when Boston rolled through Toronto, you'll hear him talk about the Boston-Toronto rivalry, Brad Marchand, some really interesting comments there, living around the net, concussion treatments, backpacks, the perfect skate blade profile, and so much more. Now, a quick heads up, around the 30-minute mark, we had an audio issue. It's airable, and we want you to be able to hear the full interview, but prepare your ears. The audio gets a little bit, how shall we say, goofy. Let's describe it that way. Bear with us. So enjoy this conversation with one of the game's best personalities, James Van Riemsdyk, on 32 Thoughts, the podcast. You've played on a lot of different hockey teams. What is unique about Boston? The team, the city, the experience, all of it.
Yeah, I think having a lot of rivalry games over the years with these guys, whether it was in Philly or here in Toronto, I think you had a lot of respect for kind of the sustained success that they had for a while. And I think the more years you play, you kind of almost wonder a little bit more what it's like behind the scenes there. And I think it's no accident being there why they've had so much success. And I think a guy like Marshy really sets the tone for the team and the group. And sure. You see how he approaches it. And I think looking back to guys like Bergeron and Chara as well, I think they've just had a good foundation of guys that are obviously really good players. But I think the way that they approach their craft and how they want to do things is pretty infectious to the rest of the group.
So I remember asking Brad May this question once. I said, you know, in your entire career, was there one team that you wished you had played for but never got to? And he said Boston Bruins. Is Boston one of your wish teams, or were they one of those, I don't know if I can ever play their teams?
It was kind of double-sided. I always thought I could be kind of a good fit with kind of the different guys that they had and what I could do. But at the same time, it was part of some pretty intense rivalries with Philly and Toronto. So in that sense, going into free agency this summer when they called, like, it was definitely a team that I was like, okay, like, this would be an awesome fit. Like, if they are interested, like, I'm going. So once they call, that was fairly obvious choice, and I'm happy with how it's turned out so far.
So living in Toronto, I grew up with a lot of people who are still Leaf fans, and you know, the standings are starting to look like it's going to be Boston-Toronto again. And I will say that a lot of Leaf fans have trauma about this from the time that you were there. Like, yeah. When you think about those series, what do you remember about them?
Yeah, well, the first one, and I think it was that lockout shortened year. I think it was one where going into that season, I think we had a lot to prove, and that was my first year there as a part of the group, but it definitely felt, you could feel that chip on the shoulder of the whole team, the whole organization. So for us to get in the playoffs, I think Boston was the team. I remember kind of Greg Cronin vividly in his Boston accent, like talking about Boston, the Boston Bruins in the preseason and how that's the standard. That's the team we want to try to emulate a little bit. So for us to play them in the first round was definitely interesting from that perspective. But again, getting down in that series 3-1 and then fighting all the way back to game seven and then having the kind of the tables flip where we have that huge lead and then the wheels started to fall off there is still kind of hurts to look back on that. And obviously the run that they went on after that too. So you're like thinking maybe that could have been us, but yeah, I mean, just for that one, that was a whole different sort of, I guess similar in some ways, but then obviously we had a few tough years and then before we played them the second time, my last year there and same sort of deal where we kind of just kept at it, kept fighting with it. And then it just seemed to just at the very end, they just didn't have enough answers for what they were doing. So, so yeah, kind of maybe some similarities in a way, but, I think, obviously two different kind of generations of the team.
You know, just something you did there, it always reminds me, this is why I've learned that some people are great at what they do and some people are elite at what they do. And for you to last as long as you have in the NHL, you are elite at what you do. But you talk about something that happened 11 years ago and it still bothers. You don't think about it a lot, but when it comes up, it still stings. And only people who really care and I want to be great at their craft think like that. I'm amazed at that. I'm impressed.
Yeah, you know what? I think the longer you play, even though there might be more years that go by, you think of it almost as a missed opportunity in a way, just because again, when you have that lead with that much time left in the game, like it should be fairly automatic. I know now with analytics, you probably get the statistics of how much percentage chance you have to win the game. But, and again, you realize how hard it is to even get to that point in the playoffs. So yeah, that's why I think it starts to sting in some ways even more, the more time that goes by. But yeah, definitely one looking back on, it definitely still hurts to look back at that.
What do you think momentum means in hockey? Like, I'm of the belief, and you can tell me whether I'm wrong, that in the playoffs, there's no such thing as momentum. These are standalone games. They're almost like these mini seasons from one game to the next. Does it feel that way for a player? Does it feel that way for you?
I think that's kind of an acquired skill. And I think I always look back, especially the last few years, I think you look at kind of Tampa, and I feel like every single time when they've been in some series and some of these games over the last couple playoff runs that they've had, it seems like there's times where they maybe look like the other team has them figured out, and then it's like the next game, like they it's like they have that short-term memory where they forget about that. So I think depending on your team, I think not kind of quieting all the extra noise that might come with certain things, I think is a good skill to have, because again, with the previous game, if it really doesn't go your way, it's one game and it's on to the next one. And I think they've done a really good job at always responding in that way on their run. It just that kind of just sits at the top of my head watching kind of the run that they were on the last few years. And I think it's definitely a skill that can be acquired.
You know, you weren't here under Char and Bergeron. I think we kind of understand what Char's leadership was like, what Bergeron's leadership was like. What is Brad Marchand's leadership like? You mentioned him a couple of minutes ago. What's the Bruins like under Brad Marchand?
You know what? He's been someone I've really enjoyed getting to know a lot better, because I've definitely a guy who, over the years, like we had a lot of good battles, especially earlier in my career, I felt like, where we were taking big runs at each other every game and lots of chirping back and forth and stuff like that. But I think just kind of seeing how he is and very comfortable in his own skin and true to himself as his own, obviously coming after guys like Chara and Bergeron, and Marchie's obviously a hell of a player himself, going to be a future Hall of Fame player. But I think, again, he's staying true to himself as a person. And again, I don't know those other two guys as well, but I imagine their personality types are a little bit different than Marchie is, but I think he does it kind of in a way that's true to himself. And I think just his approach to his craft is something that you definitely notice when you get to play with guys. You see the work that they put in, and again, it's no accident why someone like him has been able to have success over the course of all these years. And yeah, now to see him settle, it seems like every game he's setting a record or climbing the Bruins list of points or games or whatever. So It's been a lot of fun to get to know him and play with him this year.
You know, I was going to say every captain has rules of their own. Like teams have rules, but every captain has kind of rules that are tailored to them that they say, this is important to me for us. What is one of Brad Marchand's rules that he's kind of set?
That's a really good one. I think for him, like he does such a good job. Like he is such an emotional player. I think that there's times when maybe the team is a little bit sleepy and there's one shift where he'll go out there and like he's causing chaos. And I think it brings us into the game a little bit more. So I would say just bringing us into the, like never letting us have a game that goes by where we're not like engaged in that way. I think this year we've done a pretty good job of that for the most part. I think obviously we had one last night that wasn't maybe that way. It wasn't the best, but for the most part up until this point, like I think we've done a really good job of that. And I think that starts with him because I think he is so emotionally invested in how he plays and what he does. And I think it is infectious for us all to be around that.
One follow-up about you, Captain. If we took you back into time and played what you just said about your captain to 25-year-old James Van Riemsdyk, what would he say?
Oh my God. I'd be more interested in what my dad would say because I know my dad has this quote unquote list of guys that he's like, I just don't like watching him, whatever. I just don't like him. And I think he would have been at the top of it. So it's funny, I was just talking with him about this a few weeks ago, but just how great Marshy's been and how awesome he's been. And my dad's like, okay, I can take him off the list now. But no, it's crazy how your career comes kind of full circle in some ways like that. So, that part's been really cool. Like I said, for all those different battles over the years, and now obviously on the same team fighting for that same common goal. And he's been a lot of fun to learn from and play with.
What's your dad's name?
Franz.
Franz. Okay, yeah. So who else is on Franz's list of...
You knew that, guys. You knew that was coming.
Yes. So I'll go back. So growing up, it was we were big Rangers fans, so it was a lot of Flyers on that list. So it was Eric Lindros was at the top of that list. So these are all guys I've gotten to meet over the years, too, and you get to meet them away from the game and stuff like that. So that's obviously been pretty funny for me. And even my dad, we grew up Rangers fans, all like youth hockey coaches who are with me at the draft for Rangers fans. So we're meeting the brass of the Flyers at the draft and all these guys who, with all the bitter rivals with the Rangers, that they're meeting. Dave Brown is another name that kind of stands out. So my dad's like meeting all these guys and he's like, these guys are great. They're great guys. I would have never expected that. I'm like, yeah, they probably are. So yeah, that's been that part of it's always funny.
So when you got drafted by the Flyers, I mean, you had to know that the way that draft was going to go, you probably knew in advance.
Yep.
So did it take your dad a little bit of time to, you know, sort out or come to grips with the fact that James Van Riemsdyk was going to be a Flyer?
Yeah, I don't know if that makes him a little bit of a phony or what, but he was willing to forget it all pretty quickly. So that was all in the past once they drafted me. So that was definitely funny to see, because I'm like, me and my brothers are like looking at him when he's meeting some of these guys that we know, like we're watching games and he's yelling at the TV and whatever, and then we're meeting them years later and we're all laughing. But no, that's definitely some funny memories.
You know, one of the things that people always talk about, one of the hardest things to do is score goals from distance. I've always felt that scoring goals in tight is even harder because there's just such chaos around, and that's where you really thrive and you're really creative. Whether it's tipping pucks, whether it's, you know, 2-foot goals, like all of it. I just think that that's a really underappreciated skill. You look so comfortable around the net. Were you always like that?
I don't think I was always like that. I think I always had the kind of tools to be naturally good at that. But I think, again, going back to my first couple years in Philly, two key guys for helping me really develop that, I think, were Chris Pronger and Joe Mullen. Countless shots that those guys took. Chris Pronger, before practice, we'd be getting out there 15 minutes before and he'd be just firing them like basically by my shoulders, and I'm trying to like matrix out of the way and get a tip on them. And then afterwards, like I can't even, like countless shots from Joe Mullen. Like we'd work on not only that, but then just some hand stuff around the net.
Yep.
And then we'd finish off every single morning skate with a drill he called the Mario, where you have 1 foot on the goal line and he passes it from the middle and you have to hit it from that tight angle. So that's still in my routine today, where I have to get one of those before
Really?
Morning skate. So
the Mario.
The Mario, it's called. Yeah. So I don't know if he worked out that in practice. I know he scored on a few goals like that. I know I've seen some highlights of it over the years, but Joe has like that very distinct like accent. So how he would say it, like the Mario or whatever. So but I still have that as part of my routine. And it's definitely, I think you don't realize coming into the league, like you have to be deliberate in a sense about what you try to be good at, what you try to work on and things like that. So I think with Prongs right away, like he recognized that. I think that I had some kind of abilities to be able to be good at that. And
yeah,
who knows if I would have maybe worked at that or realized I could have been as good at that without him kind of pointing that out. And then I think from there, I kind of ran with that and was able to develop that over the years to get better at it.
Let me take that one tiny step further here. You know, once upon a time, everything, you know, all tips were ramp tips. It's from the ice, it's tip up, and eventually goalies realized, okay, well, that's where the tips are going. And now, you know, I remember having a conversation with someone from another team about hip tips. And, you know, they want all the shots coming in at the hips, and that's where they want players tipping pucks. You know, once upon a time, it was like, defenseman, keep it down, keep it down, keep it down. Where do you like the puck
for tips? I would say that's perfect. Hip tip? Like, I would say anything like 6 inches or less off the ice is really hard to tip. I mean, obviously, if it's on the ice, it's fairly easy. But anything from that, like above your blade to like 6-8 inches, I find those shots are harder to tip. So if they can get it over the just over the pad enough, like the, from there, I think it has a good chance to go in if you don't tip it. And then I think that's easier sight line to be able to do something with it, whether it's tip it down, tip it up. Or something like that. So I think definitely that sort of middle range of the net is the sweet spot for that, but certainly higher than like 8 inches or so.
I'm going to totally go on a fishing trip here. I've always wondered, you know, the best players at tipping pucks in the game, how much eye training they do, because there's so much of it now, like vision training and a number of different sports. Is there anything that you do for your vision? Because I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think we all look at shots coming in from the point, and these are all rockets. And how do you get sticks on it? How did Van Riemsdyk do that? And how did Pavelski do that? And, you know, once upon a time, Wayne Simmonds, how did they, Anders Lee, how do they do that? Anything you do with your eyes?
Yeah, there is. So there's a place I go in Minnesota in the summer. It's like a kind of like a chiropractic spot, but they do a lot of like neurology stuff. So that's lots of training with like your eyes, your vestibular system, things like that. So I think that's more general for performance and not necessarily just for the tipping aspect of it. But I think, again, as you see and you learn about things over the years, I think obviously having your kind of eyes be stable and working well and having the muscles in there, being able to do their job, it just kind of makes your body in a more, not relaxed state, but maybe stable state so that you can do all these things and have access to kind of your skills and your hands and your hand-eye coordination and stuff like that.
And you're doing this in front of the net where everyone's trying to hit you too. Like that's the freaky part for me. Like having your eyes that calm. When everything around you is like sticks and elbows and gloves and goalies pushing you from behind.
Yeah, I've always felt comfortable there. I think just in the sense of when you have that contact, sometimes when you know where the other guys are, you feel a little bit less vulnerable, or at least I do. I don't know if that's since I'm tall as well, but I've always kind of felt like having those battles there and knowing where the contact is coming from, like I don't feel vulnerable or exposed there. I mean, who knows if I would have felt that way 30 years ago with how the game was played, but now
Chris
it's
so,
yeah,
tired.
Exactly. That's like, I've never had battles like that in front of that, like I did with him in practice. So, he got me ready for that, but I think that's something over the years that I think you learn more and more of the nuances of the body positioning and things like that and timing and stuff. And I think that definitely helps you feel more and more comfortable there.
How many, I'm really interested in this stuff. What percentage of players do you think do, like when Sidney Crosby went through his concussion issues, he saw a doctor that worked with his vestibular system. We actually did a story on that. And I think it opened a lot of eyes of people and players to other kind of different remedies and treatments that were available to you out there. How many players do what you do with this particular thing, do you think?
Wow. So in Minnesota, at the place that is there, there's a bunch of guys and I don't even know, like at least 10 or so just there. And I know, like, again, I trained with Andy O'Brien for a bunch of years. And I think that was another part too, that really exposed me to all these different things. And again, getting to train with guys like Sid and Nate, And again, just kind of the level that they're dialed into and the things that they're trying to work on and stuff like that. I think you just always learn from different guys over the years. I'll put Jason Spezza in that category too. He was at a lot of those Vail camps and in Toronto training here with Andy. So I think you kind of learn different things that might be able to work and what's new stuff that guys are doing, and you try to pick up what you can and see what works for you.
What is maybe a unique thing that you started picking up that has prolonged your career?
I would say just the overall approach to that side of it. I think my third year in Philly, I had the concussion, I had the broken foot, and just injury wise, like, wasn't really feeling great. So there was a little bit of a crossroads there as far as going into that summer, as far as maybe the approach that I needed to take to take the next step in my career. I spent a lot of time here in Toronto working with some different like soft tissue people and stuff like that. And I think that kind of really helped me get the ball rolling and really treat that as a big part of my routine. And I think over the years, you kind of go down some different rabbit holes with that and learn different things about it. But I think just overall the mindset of that is just good to have if you want to play a long time, and just helping yourself kind of figure things out, whether you're trying to learn different skills and how you can train not only on the ice but off the ice to help you accomplish that is a big part of that. So I think being able to kind of go through that early in my career and learn the importance of all that was huge. And I think maybe even more and more curious about learning some of these different things and how you can try to make yourself feel as best as you can for each and every game.
So what is the kookiest thing that you tried that you said, okay, I've done this for X amount of time and either this is just not working or someone led me down the wrong path here?
You know what? There's like, for all that stuff, I think there's a time and a place for everything. So like a lot of the stuff that I've done over the years, like there's still a time and a place depending on where you're at, if you have access to it or not. But I've done some of the different stuff like the Reiki before, where they basically don't even, that's like energy healing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I've done a lot of different things in that world. That's definitely one of the ones where you're starting to question what you're doing a little bit, but again, it's one of those things where you get off and it's, I mean, again, you wonder if it's placebo or not, but stuff like that's been around like forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, you get up and it's like, you kind of feel, you feel different. You feel a little mentally lighter maybe. So that might be one of the most different ones, and not, maybe not one that I've used all that often, but there's, I think again, there's lots of different stuff that I think has a different time and a place. And I'm willing to try just about anything in that world and seeing how it helps.
See, I think this is all really cool. And the other thing I was told about you, so there are some famous backpacks in NHL history. And, you know, Brent Burns, he's probably carrying like machetes in there. Yeah. Gary Roberts was well known for his, but I've heard yours is pretty notorious too. What do you carry in your backpack?
You know, Pasta keeps asking me that. He keeps wondering what's going on in that. He sees the backpack. He's like, what? And he sees how big my bag is on even like the shorter road trips. He's like, what is going on here? So mostly in that, it's just like different like vitamins, things like that. Maybe a couple different like recovery tools or whatever. Just some pregame warm-up stuff. A breath work, this little device that I have for that. So it kind of evolves over the years and changes a little bit. Sometimes there's my iPad in there just to watch shows. So that's pretty basic.
That's
for
normal.
That, but that's normal. But yeah, there's some, it's definitely evolved over the years to how much I have and how big the backpack is. So it's gotten a little bit bigger, but yeah, I think it's all part of that general mindset of just wanting to be the best I can every day, and the little things that you think might help you get there.
Does anyone ever go in and try to steal anything? Like say, what is this or what is that? Or
I had the vitamins out the other day, and some guys were looking at me like, what is, I mean, they hadn't seen me do it before, and I almost kind of forgot that, and they're like, what are you doing?
So
I was at a team meal after a game, and some of the guys were laughing about that.
So how many vitamins? How many vitamins are we talking about here?
Now it's not too many. I've done some different like cleanses over the years, and especially in the off season more so, where you're kind of taking a bunch of pills every day. But now it's not a ton. It's more of the basic, just kind of like vitamin D, vitamin C, stuff like that. So
do you do juice cleanses and things like that in the off
season? I've never tried a specific juice cleanse, but I've done some of like the what is it called, like candida cleanse, stuff like that, like stuff like that. But no, the juice cleanse, I've actually, I know we were talking about Jake Gardner before, but he was doing like a 72-hour water fast or something the other day. And he's like, he said, I made it. And then he just kept texting me updates. And he's like, I made it to like hour 50. And I'm like, I'm done. It's over. So no, I'm willing to try all that stuff, though. I think, again, there's some value in all these different things. And I think if you don't tinker with that, I think maybe something really works for you and it really helps. So I'm all about that.
When you're done, whenever that is, you could be like a wellness influencer and you could try all this stuff. Yep. I guarantee you, James, it could really work.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe we get some content going with that, trying all these different things. Like I said, I've met a lot of very smart, very interesting people over the years, kind of going down, learning about these different sort of, whether it's treatment or technique or training or things like that. So definitely a lot of really cool stuff out there that, again, it's kind of that blended line of wellness and performance, right? So it's all kind of under the same sort of, at least I view it kind of under the similar umbrella.
Anything for your brain?
Yeah, that going back to the neurology place, like doing the different...
as far as like drills, vitamins like, and things like that.
Yeah, just more like the basic stuff like that. That's something I'd like to learn more about. I think that's more, for me, that's more new in the sense of learning about learning about that and the impact of that and how you can really help help kind of sustain some of that. Because again, obviously the game that we play is a physical violent game and you try to stay on top of all these things just to, again, so you're not only feeling good in the day to day of doing your job, but you want to make sure you're feeling good when you're done too. So that you're not dealing with all this extra things when you're done playing. I think the better you can feel day to day now, I think I'm hoping that some of your longer term issues might be more manageable than they would be if you did nothing.
I asked some of the Maple Leafs about you and you know what they said, James, was whatever success that this group of Maple Leafs has, and I know you're hoping it's not as much this season, but it was due to the work that players like yourselves did when they first showed up. And they said that you were one of a group of players who was really good to this group when they first arrived. And you showed them the way. And I also heard that the Leafs considered bringing you back years later because of how good you were with these players. And I just wanted to ask, what do you remember about them when they first arrived? What were the lessons that you felt you helped teach them? And did you know that Toronto considered bringing you back later?
No, I didn't know that. And obviously, speaking of my time here, like I loved every second of it. And it was so great for my career. And just getting a chance to kind of spread my wings a little bit more when I first came here. And then it's funny how it shifts fairly quickly. Like I always kind of those first 3-4 years, like you think you're one of the younger guys and all of a sudden you got 18-year-old Austin Matthews and 19-year-old Mitch Marner walking through the doors and you're one of the older guys now. But I remember when those guys came in that first year, how excited that we all were, just because again, like those last couple of years, it was little bit of frustration dealing with the team wasn't doing as well as we thought we could have been doing. I thought we had some really good pieces still. We just kind of couldn't really put it all together. Maybe needed a little bit more depth. So to have that kind of infusion of that young group that came in, whether it was Mitch, Austin, Willie, Connor Brown, Zach Hyman, guys like that, I think we were just so excited about that and kind of the promise that we had all seen from them. And again, just speaking like to the first time on the ice, like with someone like Austin in that summer and like one of the captain skates, like you could see like he was going to be the real deal pretty much right away. And I remember with Mitch getting to play with him, like, so the first training camp, I can't remember where we went for that one, but you could see kind of how smart of a player he was going to be and how good of a player he was going to be. And he went back to junior that one year. And then I think the next year he was like one of the most dominant players on the ice, like right from the get-go too. So it's like seeing like the growth that these guys had and kind of the appetite that they had for wanting to be elite players and the work that they were willing to put in for it and how badly they wanted to get to that level, I think was pretty impressive right from the start. I think sometimes it can take longer for younger players to figure that part of it out as far as figuring out their routines or how they're going to work at their craft. But I think especially for those three guys, like they were very determined and very driven to get to that point very early on. So that was kind of exciting to be a part of that from those early years of that.
Do you talked about how you knew they were going to be good. Did they have any moments where you're like, holy, like, I guess, do you have any moments where you're like, okay, this is a rookie going to the NHL and they're really talented, but they still got a lot to learn here. Like,
well, you wonder that from the start, but I mean, like Austin obviously had four goals in his first game. And then
what were you guys doing during that game? Like, wait.
I'm like you were shocked, but you weren't, because you'd seen, like I mentioned, like that first, like couple, like those captain's practices, you could see like the puck would just like stick to him wherever he was out there. Like he would go into like a 50-50 and somehow he'd be like, just pull the puck by the guy. And like the guy's like looking around, like what just happened? Like the puck be bounced, like he would like at corralling pucks in his feet and corralling bouncing pucks, things like that. Like he was so like, he had a real like kind of gift for that. Something that like almost the way that he did it was super different than I had seen, and how athletic and dynamic he was in that way. And then, yeah, I mean, that year, I think that Austin had 40 goals that year. Mitch had like 65 points and Willie was not far behind that either. So you could tell like when guys are coming in right away, and that's kind of their springboard into things like that you can tell how good, obviously Captain Obvious, how good they were going to be.
Yeah. All right, Kiko time. I know you're a big skate scribe guy.
Yeah.
True or false, James Van Riemsdyk is on the pursuit for the perfect blade profile.
That would be true. That would be, I think, just learning more about this stuff over the years and just the different things that can go into, like, again, I think especially for someone that's bigger and taller, like you want to be as stable as you can, and you want to be not leave anything on the table as far as your skating. And obviously that could be speed, that could be quickness, that could be whether that's turns or stops and starts. I think especially as you get older, that becomes more important. You want to make sure that you're in a position that you're getting the most out of that as you can. So I think that's why I've been so into that the last couple of years, especially to try to really get that honed in so that I can make sure that's staying up to par.
How much has it changed? What are you using right now?
So right now I'm just using a pretty standard like 10-foot profile and then a longer part of my blade profile.
Okay.
So, and that's a little bit different. I didn't even know that. Like if you would have asked me like what I came in the league using, I would have no idea.
Oh, guys are so freaky. Guys are freaky. Like once upon a time it was, you would see guys with their sticks, right? And the blow torches and like spend hours. But now it's all the blades, and guys are freaky about this now.
For sure. And that's something too. Like the more I start to get into it, then I start to ask other guys like what they're using and just seeing what works for them. And a lot of guys maybe don't even know. So that's, I mean,
and that's kind of a nice place to be too. If like you're just like, oh, it just works and it's good. And it's a lot of good players that I've asked, like some of them don't know. And that's great. So it's like, you try to see if there's a pattern anywhere too, where I'm like, oh, you know, maybe for bigger guys that are built this way, like maybe this is something I should think about trying because this works for him for this reason, and you give it a shot. And during the season, I don't tinker as much with that. I think that's something to be consistent with, but then definitely the summer, you're messing around a little bit more with that.
I was told that Jason Spezza had a different profile for each skate. Is that freaky?
From what I know now, no. I would say that's probably should be more of the standard or...
Really
place, because not everyone is very symmetrical from their right to left side. So you would think that if that's the case, then you would probably need something that works a little bit differently for each side. And that's what I mentioned before with Patrick Kelly, who's been unbelievable. I've been working with him now for, I want to say, like 8 or 9 years. And he's definitely someone that's helped me a lot. And that's someone who...
Describe him, because he's like the pegs in between the boots and the pro.
So he basically helps customize the pitch of your holder, you can call it your boot. So it's trying to find... So again, it comes back to stability, balance, and all these things. So the more stable you are, obviously, the more athletic you can be, and stronger your skates, you can be, all these other qualities, right? So he tries to help find that sweet spot for you for that. I think there's a lot of science, and there's a little bit of feel to it when you get towards the end of how different you want to go with it, or how far forward you want to be pitched, and things like that. So he's definitely someone I learned a lot from about those things. And I think, again, like there's certain skills on the ice, like before I got adjusted, like by him, like it was like, okay, like my crossovers to my right or my turns to my right are not as smooth and definitely not as fluid. And again, just adjusting the thing, like again, going back to Spez talking about his different profiles, similar sort of thing where you're like, okay, like how do you find that balance and things like that, stability, so that you can do all these different movements that we can do out there. So that's something that's definitely helped me a lot over the years.
That flies against like all knowledge that everybody has growing up from both skates. You have to have the exact same skate on your right and your left.
Yeah.
And the profile has to be the same. The sharpie has to, all of it has to be identical. Like that flies in the face
exactly,
all of it. Are you that way about your stick as well? Are you that way about your pattern? Are you one of the Adam Oates flat heel toe curve guys? Like, who are you with your stick?
Yeah, I'm using his exact stick. So I've been working with Oatsy too for a while now. For probably, she's probably a similar amount of time, probably 8 or so years.
So, he's got you on
the stick. I held off for a while. I think I only started using it maybe like 3 or 4 years into working with him, but. There's definitely a method to his madness for that, and then the more you kind of start to feel it and see it, and then you can start to notice it on other guys who maybe should think about adjusting it. But again, I think the way he kind of uses it, it's like your tool. So it's like if you're going out to rake leaves, it's like you wouldn't have a shovel to do that rake. So it's like for the certain tasks that we need to do on ice, whether it's picking pucks off the boards, or making a play on your backhand, or handling a puck on your backhand, corralling a bouncing puck. Like there's obviously different attributes in your stick and your blade and your curve and your lie that can help you do that more efficiently and easily. And obviously, that's
change your line too.
But I knew something that was fairly similar to what he had, but I went full in on what he liked and recommended for guys, and I really liked it ever since, and I think it's made a difference for me.
What was the hardest part of the blade to get used to? Was it the toe? Was it the heel?
I would say one thing, because I used something that was fairly similar to it, so I just noticed there was nothing that I felt like was a drawback when I switched. Like it all felt like, okay, like I can handle passes on my backhand easier now. I can make backhand passes a little bit easier. I can handle pucks getting them on the boards now a little bit better. So there was nothing that really jumped out as like, oh, I gotta like take a little more time to like get used to this. Like it all felt pretty natural. And
parts of learning the blade. Like, no, that's a big one, right?
Yeah, no, yeah, that all felt better with that. I felt like I had more range to pick up pucks, whether it was closer to my feet, further away, things like that. So that's all. That transition was all pretty seamless for me.
Okay, yeah, I got my geek stuff.
Oh, it was good. I geek stuff. Okay, so I got a couple more, but. First of all, you mentioned Pronger before. What was the worst time you felt the wrath of Pronger?
That's an easy one. That's like the first month or so of the year. So yeah, I was number 21, he's number 20. So our change stalls are right next to each other. And as probably my parents and brothers can attest to, I'm sometimes maybe not the most tidy.
Oh, I
appreciate my stuff. So there's a very clear lot. So that the change stall there is like almost like individual. Like there was no like line in between, like a locker between, but like there was like pronounced edges of your stall. So I guess my shoes had found their way over onto his side, and then after that, my shoes found their way into the hot tub. So that was probably about it.
That's pretty wild. That's
to say. No, yeah.
I've heard worse.
Too bad. No, that stuff like that. It's all. Yeah, I almost had like a pinch me moment. Like before, it was before that training camp. That was my first year pro. I was at the facility for most of the summer, and he was there too. And I remember him like just like inviting me and a couple other guys over for like a barbecue at his house. And it's just like the way, like thinking back, like on the flip side of that, like you try to pay that forward with maybe other guys that are coming in, younger guys, just because that made me feel like way more comfortable and way more like, okay, like I belong here sort of thing. Like I need to, like, this is going to be potentially my teammate. And it's not like almost like that ease a little bit of that anxiety going into like training camp, and it's kind of feel like you're walking on an ice shelf. Like you felt a little bit more kind of comfortable with the guys and stuff like that. So that was pretty cool.
Do you and Trevor talk about ever playing together or anything like that? Like, how much do you guys discuss that?
Yeah, you know what? That was something that'd be amazing. Yeah. So, yeah, we've talked about that a little bit. Obviously, it hasn't worked out yet to this point, but you never know in the future what can happen there. But that would be something that would be pretty cool. I mean, now it's like my parents have pretty ideal setup to see both of us. I mean, they're basically 3.5 hours from both of us, so mm-hmm. that works out fairly easily for them. But yeah, if we're able to get the chance one day to play together, like that would be super special. So we'll see. I'll see if that can happen down the road.
Okay, so let's just say that Boston and Washington are playing on the same night, and your parents, since they have an equal drive,
yeah,
and they're both at home,
yeah,
who do they decide to see, you or Trevor?
You know, like the Washington's like really in this playoff push. Like, we want to be there for that one. Like, you know, everyone's in a little bit different spot in the standings or whatever. So, so that's how they might decide for certain things.
So there's no favor here. Like, there's
my brothers would probably argue I'm the favorite. But I don't know. Well, actually, my brothers would argue I'm my dad's favorite. That Trevor is my mom's favorite, and that my youngest brother Brandon is both their favorites. I guess everyone gets a little love that way, but yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if I'm the actual favorite, but I guess they think it's fairly obvious, so who knows.
Last one for me, you're coming up on your 35th birthday. They're gonna have to drag you off the ice, James.
Yeah, you know what, as long as I'm still having fun and enjoying it and my body feels good, and I think like that motivation, I still enjoy that. I don't even know, like the grind of just day in, day out, trying to figure things out, trying to get better at certain things, trying to work at things. The curious mind. That's still very, I still love that part of it. Like, I love like that part, like going into the off season after a season, like obviously like that first couple of weeks where you're trying to like, okay, what am I gonna work on this summer? What do I want to try to get better at? What worked for me last year? I still love that process. Like that process for me is a lot of fun, and trying to tinker with different things that way to maximize myself. I think, because again, it's the game can be very kind of honest in that way, in the sense like you know pretty much what worked and what didn't, and you got to try to figure things out to try to be successful and things like that. And obviously, again, the number one thing is getting a chance to win. But I think trying to keep yourself as an attractive player long enough to be in situations where you have a chance to do that it's the balance of that as well too. So yeah, that's what drives me at this point, getting that chance to win. And I think I still enjoy that grind and that process of getting prepared to play and trying to maximize the most out of my career and your abilities.
You just spent a lot of time. We really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck the rest of the way with the Bruins.
Thanks for having me, guys.
James Van Riemsdyk of the Boston Bruins. Really enjoyed that one. Hope you did as well. JVR really is the best. That was so much fun. Thanks to him for making himself available. And thanks to Brij Singh and Travis Basciota of the Boston Bruins Communications Group for making this one possible. New 32 Thoughts pod coming out Friday morning as per usual. Class dismissed. Conduct yourself accordingly until we speak again. Elliot, yet another start to another week. Now, other than the 32 Thoughts podcast, there's not much else really to look forward to.
Jeff, you are forgetting about Montana's Daily Deals. Their chicken wings are double dusted in-house, cooked to a golden crispy finish, and they're half price on Mondays.
Half price?
Half price every Monday and sauced however you like them.
Well then, head on down to Montana's Barbecue and Bar for half price wings every Monday. The only other thing exciting about Mondays. Some conditions apply. Visit montanas.ca for details.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Mini did this with the Eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.